Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevomah Daf Ayin Vov. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the second line from the top of Daf Ayin Vov. Before we begin the shiur, we glance at the side where we have our topic heading, the Nosei, Nikev Nekev Koton Venistam. We're dealing with the topic that we had dealt with in our previous shiur, the issue of a hole formed in the male organ of gender, which is, of course, the organ that facilitates reproduction, a hole developed, which we learned in our previous year could interfere with his acceptability in marrying into Klal Yisrael because of the general topic of Psua Daka and Kus Shofcha, where as a result of the hole, so the male seed will not be capable of fertilizing the female in cohabitation. So the Gemara here deals with this issue of the hole that existed, but was very small, and it became sealed up. So Gemara will deal with, first of all, Heicha Nikev, where was this hole? And the second point, Eich Boidkim Im Hu Stimo Mal Yisa. How can we check out whether the seal will hold up? Whether it's a good seal. Dahainu Im Nikri Lo Yikra HaNekev. The issue being that when the male seed issues forth during an ejaculation, the hole will not open and start to widen. If that were to happen, so then he would be unfit for continuing to be married to his wife, if she, of course, is a regular, kosher, pure pedigree Jewish woman. So now we turn to the Gemara. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, second line from the top, third line from the top, Nikev Vinistam. And we look at Rashi on the third line from the top, Nikev Nekev Koton, Shinistam Bekol Shehu, a very small hole that got sealed up somehow and in a very fine way. V'ein Niker, and it's not noticeable. Royim Im Godol Kolkach, we have to evaluate if it's big enough. Shem Nikri Ha'ish Hazeh Nikra. Nikri is the situation of Keri where the semen issues forth. If when that happens, does the hole rip open? Marchiv HaNekev Machmas Doicha Kazera, and the hole will widen because of the pressure of the Zera, of the seed, the semen, shemis asef, that gathers together. And if that happens, posel, so the person is going to be considered krus shavcha and not kosher, not acceptable in marrying into the Jewish fold. So now the Gemara. So we described Nikev, the hole developed, but nistam, and it got sealed up, and as Rashi says, a very small hole. We say as follows, Kol She'ilu Nikri V'Nikra, any situation where if he experiences Keri V'Nikra and it tears, Pusel, then the person is unfit. V'ilo and V'lav, and if that doesn't happen, if the seal holds up, Kosher, he is acceptable. Havi Bo Rava. Rava asked, Heicha, where is this hole? If you were to say that it's below the Altar, and we described this in our previous year also, the Altar is a raised type of ridge of skin toward the end of the male organ, but not at the very end. So if it's below that Altar, so then Afilu Nichras Nami, even if the male organ were chopped off altogether at that point, at the tip, below the Atorah, below that ridge, that would not affect his status. He would be still acceptable. Elo be'atora atzmo. Rather, the whole is in the Atorah itself. Rashi adds here that the Gemara does not debate whether if the whole is above the Atorah, because above the Atorah, even if there was a hole, a very small hole, it wouldn't rip open because the semen at that point is not, hasn't accumulated, doesn't create a lot of pressure. So the hole is Atorah atzma. Itmar nami. It was stated also like Rava, Omar Rav, Mori Bar Mar, Omar Mar Ukfa Mar Shmuel, Nikev Ba'atorah Atzma V'Nistam. If the hole developed in the Atorah itself, that was that Atorah literally is a crown. It's something that runs around the male organ, this ridge of skin, this raised ridge of skin that runs around the male organ. The hold was there, and it nistam, and it got sealed up. Kol she'ilu nikri v'nikra puzzle. If he would experience a semen and it would rip open, that would be puzzle. V'ilav, if with the semen experience the carry, it remains sealed kosher, so the individual is acceptable. Acceptable means once again to marry a standard Jewish woman. Sholach le rova bre derabo l'rav Yosef. Yilamdenu rabenu. Rava sends to Rav Yosef asking him, teach us, Hechi Avdinon, how do we check things out? If a case like this comes to us, a person with a very small hole in the Atorah and it got sealed up, how do we establish, how do we check it out? How do we bring him to carry? Now, it's important to note that Gemara doesn't get into the background too much over here, but it does so very openly in Maseches Nida that a deliberate male semen experience, ejaculation that he brings on himself outside the realm of actual sexual intercourse with one's spouse, that is a serious offense. It's called Shichva Zera Levatola, a very, very serious offense. So it's but on the other hand, we have a very serious issue right now. Is the person going to be, is he considered kosher or not? So it's a, we'll say that it's a very sensitive issue, and we say sensitive, maybe there's a certain element of pun involved over there, but we have that. Hence the Gemara is asking, what do we do to bring him to a state of carry to see whether the seal holds up? And it has to be some type of method that doesn't involve a wrongful action where a person, let's say, does things to himself, or a man does things to himself, which brings this about. So Omar Leh, Rav Yosef responds. And you'll see we have a volcano shape, and it's indicated under the Mivneh heading on the side. These are Deos Aech Bodkim Hanal. These are opinions of how we go about the checking. So Omar Le, Maisino Naamo Chamimo Desairi, we bring some warm barley bread, a loaf of warm barley bread, Umanchino Le Abe Pukri, and we put it on the man's anus, Umikri, and that will cause him to experience keri. And then we look, we check it out. We check out whether the hole holds up, the seal holds up. Omar Abaye. Abaye, in hearing this suggestion, he says, Otu kule almo yankiv ovinu havoi. Are we all like our patriarch Jacob? Now, the Gemara will describe in very brief terms that he was a very pure individual. He did not have, he didn't experience a keri until his very first act of cohabitation with his wife, which produced their first son, Reuven. In other words, he had reached his quite adult years before he ever experienced keri. So that in order for someone like that, who had such tremendous control, to bring him to a state of carry, you have to invoke some very proactive means. So the Gemara is saying, do you really need to go that far with common people? Is everyone the patriarch Jacob? Dichtiv Bey, regarding him, the Gemara says, it says in the Pasuk, Koichi Vereishis Oini, regarding Reuven, that he was my first strength. Now, first strength means Shelo Ro Keri Miyamav. He had not experienced Keri ever before that. So we look at Rashi Reishis Oini, he Hoysa Tipas Keri Shiotsa Mimenu Rishon. That was the first drop of male seed that ever emitted forth from him. Shelo Ro Keri Miyamav. Klomar, the Matzrichislei Kulehai, is everyone our patriarch Yankiv Avinu that we require so much in order to bring about Keri, like this method? Therefore, Elo Omar Abai, the Gemara continues, Mavirin Maavrinon Kamei Bigdei Tzivoinin. In order to appreciate this line, one would have to be a little more familiar with the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah, where the Gemara talks about gazing upon a woman's colored garments. This act would remind someone of the owner of those colored garments and could bring them about to thoughts of that nature, of woman-related thoughts. And that will bring him to experiencing Keri. So Omar Rava hears Abaye's suggestion and says, Otu Kule Alma Barzilai Hagilodi, who is everyone, this character, Barzilai Gilodi, he's a gentleman that appears in the Tanakh. You find him involved with David HaMelech. He was an individual that, according to the Chazal, was very involved with women and relations with women, we'll say. Rashi says, Shotuf Bezima. He was steeped in these kind of activities, these kind of, say, woman thoughts, womanly thoughts, on the part of a man, and someone like that is easily brought about to carry. So what Rava is saying, this kind of a very chancy, happenstance type method of showing a man some woman's colored garments, and that will cause him to experience Keri, that would be characteristic if someone's really steeped in these matters. But a common man will see colored garments and it wouldn't have that effect on him. So we can't rely on that test. Elo machvarto kidishonin meikora. Rather, it's more likely, like we said originally. And in this case, the original approach would have been the warm barley bread approach. Tonu Rabbanan. Nikev posel mipnei shu shoyseis. If a male organ developed a hole, so that will render the man unfit to marry into the Jewish fold, rank and file Jewish women, the upcoming Mishnah tells us that a Khrushchev can marry a Gioress or a freed bondmaid, but a regular woman from Jewish pedigree, so that, no. That's a result of his having a hole that developed in that organ. And that's Mipneshu Shoseis. Rashi says, She Mechamimu Sataiva Yoitse Derech HaNekev Ein Yora Kecheitz. When he desires to cohabitate, the semen will not come through the regular tube, but rather will drip out through the hole. And it's Ein Yora Kecheitz, means it doesn't come out with the required force, literally shot like an arrow, but means with the proper force. And we know that Shichva Zera, the male seed that does not issue forth in a forceful fashion like the shooting of an arrow, will not cause fertilization, will not cause enable procreation to take place. The Gemara continues, Nistam Kosher, if that hole gets sealed up, he is acceptable, Neshuhu Moivid, because he is capable of reproduction. V'zeo posul or psul shechoyzer lechsherer, and this is a case of something that was unfit and gets restored to being acceptable. When you see an expression like zehu, that oftentimes raises the question of what is this coming to exclude, because this is a limitation expression, namely that this is a case of a psul that gets better, of something was unfit that recovers. There's another case that doesn't. So zehu limute mai, when you speak about this one as being a case of recovery to the exclusion of another case where recovery is not viewed as possible or acceptable, limute, so this comes to exclude a case that deals with holes in the realm of trephus, of animals and their acceptability in being eaten. In other words, the Gemara will describe on this line an animal lung, that after slaughtering the animal and you view and investigate, check out its lungs, you notice that there had been a hole, but a scab developed over the hole. Even though right now the lung doesn't have a hole, we don't rely on the scab that had developed. And in general, holes in certain organs, maybe vital organs, we can say, holes in organs will render an animal, even though it's a kosher variety animal, but it's not acceptable as something that one can eat. That's called, in technical terms, that's called a trefa. In modern jargon, contemporary jargon, people use the term trefa as referring to all animals that one is forbidden to eat. But in halachic terms, a trefa is, as we said, an animal whose organs, many different organs, there are 18 different examples of trefas that we have on tradition. So this is an example of a hole that developed a cover or a seal to it, but we don't rely on it. And now the Gemara says, "Limute krum." Krum is the scab or the membrane that covers sha'ola machmas mako bereya, a membrane or a scab that developed over an injury in a lung. The eino krum. We do not rely on it. And the reason for that is that if you hadn't slaughtered the animal in the course of time, just through the animal's breathing, that krum, that scab would not have held up. Sholach le Rav Idi bar Ovin labaye hechi avdinon. Rav Idi asks, what can be done to seal up a hole? And we're talking about the hole in the male organ. So if you have a fellow comes and he indicates that he has this problem, what can we do to help him? So the Gemara has a fascinating suggestion. And you'll see here again sensitivity to different forms of, say, medical procedure, bordering on surgery. Maisinon sa'arta, we bring sa'arta's word sa'ora, a barley grain. Umesartinon le, and where there is a hole in that man's organ, we scratch it. We create a blood flow. Umaisinon tarba. And we bring some, tarba is fats. Vishaifinon, and we smear some fats over the now scratched hole that has a little blood flow. Umaisinon shumshano gamlo. A shumshano is an insect, an ant, gamla, a large ant. U mankesinon le, and we insert the ant's head over there, where the hole is, and the ant will bite where its head is ending up. And at that point, we decapitate the ant's head. Upaskino le lereshe. So what we've done is we've created a seal. The ant's head is in effect sealing the hole, and the ant's head is stuck in the hole. And what will happen? Rashi completes the story. the body, now that it's bleeding over there, it will ant's head will, in the course of time, will decompose, but the bleeding that took place will generate actual skin skin tissue to be regenerated, and it will replace the sealing that was accomplished by the ant's head, so that the body regeneration of tissue matter will then serve as the effective seal. Now the Gemara adds that in terms of scratching that area to create the blood flow, v'dafka sarta, it was important that you bring only a barley grain. Now a barley grain has a pointy tip to it, which can be used for creating that blood flow. But we want you to use only that, but not metal. Aval parzala, but using metal, and it could very well be that we're talking about in the time of the Gemara, metal, though it was available, wasn't necessarily sterilized, and it's Mizraf Zaruf. It can create inflammation, which might be a reference to some type of lack of sterileness cause inflammation over there. So therefore, we're telling you, don't use metal. Vahani mili koton. This repair will work only for a very small hole. Avogodol, but a larger type hole. If you try this method with a larger hole, mikpuli mikpal, it will open up again. It will unravel the whatever what you try to do. It won't last. Omar Rabo bar Ravuna Hamatil Mayim Mishte Mekoimos Posel. If when one urinates, so the urine comes out from two spots, so he is unfit. He's unfit to marry a regular Jewess. Omar Rava Les Hilchasa. Rava, in hearing this halacha, he says that the halacha is lo kibra, does not follow Rabo, velo ka'abo, nor will the halacha follow Ravuna. Now, what are the halachas that they said? Well, bro hodi amoran, the halacha of bro, of the son, meaning rabo baravuna, we just said it. He wanted to rule strictly that would render unfit someone whose mayim, whose urine comes out of two spots. Now, abo, ravuna, said something that we didn't see yet, but it gave rise to Rava's rejecting of it. So what did Ravuna say that Rava did not accept? The Omer Rav Huna, Noshim Hamasoilos Zubazu. In modern terminology, this is what we probably would call lesbian activity. It's two women that are rubbing one on the other. Rashi says Derech Tashmish Zochor Nekeva, as a man and woman cohabitate. So you have two women that are Meshavshefois Nikvosan Zulazu, that they are rubbing their organs, their female gender organs, one on the other. And Rav Huna says that women who engage in that, psulos lakuhuna, they are considered unfit to marry a Kohen on the grounds of being znus. Znus is that type of activity that would lead a woman to be categorized as a zoina. You see, the word znus and zona are similar words. Znus is the activity, and zona is the woman who practices it. A kohen is warned against marrying an isha grusha v'zona v'chalala lo yikochu, the pasuk says. So Rav Huna says that women who do this are going to, they fall into the category, they bring upon themselves this label of being a zona. The Rava, on the other hand, disagrees. He says, "V'afilu Rabbi Lezer domar poni abo apnuy l'shem ishus aso zona." Even according to the extreme opinion of how easy it is to become labeled a zona, according to Rabbi Lezer, an unmarried couple, meaning a man and woman, single man, single woman, that have intimacy with one another, that is enough to make her into a zona. But hani mili ish, that's only when a man cohabits with the woman. Aval isha, but two women behaving in this fashion, pritsusa bi'alma, it's considered mere lewdness, but it doesn't have the effect of changing her legal status. The Mishnah. We've been making many references to the Tzua Daka and the Khrushchev as not being acceptable into the regular Jewish fold. So here is the Mishnah that deals with that. Tzua Daka Khrushchev, the Tzua Daka we described in our previous Shurim, where injuries, impact had affected the male organs of reproduction, Khrushchev, where something was cut, severed, Mutorin Bigioris Umishukheris. Now, we have to point out that these people, the Tzua Daka and the Khrushchev, are people that are incapable of reproduction as a result of these elements. Not someone who simply became aged, but he was someone who was once capable. Here is someone that is not capable because of injury. So they are allowed to marry a convert or a bondmaid that was freed. That makes them Jewish by way of general religious category, if you will. They're Jewish, but they are not considered what the Torah terms kahal. Kahal is an expression that has major halachic impact. So that the translation, just merely translating kohol, doesn't do justice to the significance of that word. Generally speaking, the literal translation has to do with the assembly or the community. So that in order to be considered kohol, so you'd be someone who is not a convert nor a freed bondmaid. A convert or a freed bondmaid is not labeled kahal. Now, why is kahal so important? Because the pasuk that deals with the Khrushchev and the Tzua Daka mentions that lo yavo Tzua Daka Khrushchev bekal Hashem. They are banned. They are told they are not to marry someone who is labeled as kahal. So, being that the Giyoris and Shukheris are not considered kahal, there's no problem. As the Mishnah says, "Ve'en on asurin elo milovoi b'kol shenemar lo yovod tzuadaku ukus shavcha b'kal Hashem." The Torah warns them, these men, not to marry into kahal Hashem. But if you're not labeled as kahal, so you're not a part of the prohibition. Bo minei me Rav Sheshes. The question was asked of Rav Sheshes. Tzuadaka koyein, and this is, by the way, the topic heading on the side of our Gemara, but then the Gemara says, "Psua daka kain mahu begiuris u'mishuchares." On the one hand, we have him as a psua daka. Now, the Mishnah said, "Psua daka is allowed to marry a giuris u'mishuchares." On the other hand, his father is a kohen, and a kohen is not allowed to marry a giuris nor a mishuchares. You have two opposite forces playing in this individual. So we want to analyze. Do we say b'kedushase koi v'asir, or dilma lav b'kedushase koi v'shari? Here again, we have terms that we can translate, but I think that something is lost in sticking to the simple translation. Realize that we're dealing with halachic concepts. So a kohen who is also a Psua Daka, is he b'kedushase koi? Does he retain his original status of holiness? That's kedusha. And if he does, so then he would be prohibited from marrying a Gioris and Meshukheris. Odilma, or maybe, no, he doesn't have that. Once he's become a Psua Daka, he loses his original status of kedusha. and he would then be allowed. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice that we have triangles that appear on the side under our Mivneh heading. These triangles represent an attempt to keep track of the give and take, the back and forth flow of ideas. We call this a ma'akav. We've also added, there's a she'ela. Ha'im p'tsua daka b'kdusha se'kai, does he retain his kedusha? V'eich ma'amidim ha'posuk, how are we to understand the following posuk that deals with the seven nations that occupied the land of Israel? Was called Eretz Canaan before the entrance of the Jewish people in the time of Yoshua. They were called the seven nations. Pasuk says, Loi sischatein bom. You are not allowed to marry them. The Torah, in fact, instructs the Jewish people to annihilate that those seven nations that had inhabited the land of Israel. There are many details to that issue of annihilation, and what about attempts to make peace. Those are topics that are not relevant to our sugya, but one might look into them all the same. We'll see another marking that's used a little later, a double underline, v'chi gozur. And you'll see these are shlavim b'havonas divrei Rava harishainim. When Rava will appear shortly in the Gemara, and he appears making rulings or conclusions, but in two different directions. So we're going to be analyzing the first stage of Rava using this double underline. And according to Rava, in his first approach, Shesavar da posuk lo sischatei meduba biyosim ovdei kechovim, v'rabbonan gozru bahem achar geirusam. According to Rava, the pasuk that we cited before, Lo sischatein bom, is a reference to the prohibition of marrying them while they were before they ever convert. But if they convert to Judaism, then there is a rabbinic prohibition. Again, that's going to be hopefully clearer as we go on in the Gemara. So the question had been asked of Rav Sheshes regarding the Ptsua Daka Kain, can he marry a Giores or Mishucheres? We continue in the Gemara. Omar le Rav Sheshes. Tenisuos, Rav Sheshes says, determine your question or respond to your question through the following Tanaic source. And the result of this, as far as Rav Sheshes is concerned, is to demonstrate that a Ptsua Daka is no longer in his original Kedusha. He loses his original sanctity. What does it say in the source? Ptsua Daka Yisrael Mutar Benesina. That a Ptsua Daka, a Jew who is a Ptsua Daka, is allowed to marry a Nesina. Rashi adds that the Nesina is in this case it's a woman from one of the seven nations, one of those seven nations from the what we see in the Tanakh referred to as the Givonim. The Givonim were really people that were from the Amorite people, one of the seven nations that actually deceived Yehoshua in the time of the entrance of the Jewish people to Eretz Yisrael. So this source says that a Ptsua Daka Yisrael is allowed to marry a Nesina. If one were to think that the Ptsua Daka retains his original Klal Yisrael holiness status, Ikri Khan, refer to him. Ikri means, is from the word Korah. Read the following pasuk and apply it to him. Lo yischatein bom. You're not allowed to marry those people. We have a little note on the side. He'ora. Lo sim leif. We're advising you to take note. Eich ma'amidim ha'posuk. How are we going to set up the understanding of this posuk? Be'giyusan oy afilu shenizgairu. Is this pasuk talking about when they are still idol worshippers, or is it referring to those people even after they convert? L'matara zu, hidgashnu b'rashi, with the diamonds. In other words, when you learn Rashi, you'll see that the approach to this pasuk varies, and we highlight the different approaches with a diamond in the Rashi. Let us take a look at the Rashi itself on the first wide line under the Gemara. How could we allow a Jew to marry a Nesina, even if the Nesina has converted to Judaism? The pasuk says you cannot marry them. So from the fact we have a Tanaic source that says Psua Daka is allowed to marry a Nesina, it shows that the Psua Daka no longer has the high standard of Kedusha. Let's go back to the Gemara. Omar Rava. Notice the inverted triangle. He says, Otu Hasam, in as far as the Isur of the Pasuk is concerned, Mishum Kedusha V'lav Kedusha Hu, is the pasuk which says lo sishchatein bom dependent on a person's holiness level or not? That's not the prohibition that the pasuk is considering. Rather, dilma moilid ben. What we're afraid of is that a child will be born. The ozu polach leavidas kechavim who. We don't want a Jew to marry the member of the seven nations, because a child might be born and the child then will go and serve idols, because you're dealing with an idolatrous people. Vahani mili biyosanov dekechovim, and that is true. The posuk, namely the posuk, is speaking when they are still goyim, they're still idol worshippers, they haven't converted. Ki Megairi Mishra Sharu, when they convert, in the event that they convert, one of those seven nations converts, they are Mutar. Rabbonon Hu de Gozrubu, and the Rabbonon intervened and said, I understand they converted, but we still don't want rank and file Jewish people marrying those people. Again, it's a rabbinic restriction, and when the rabbis make Gzera, it's probably because they are anticipating someone marrying them before they convert. It's a gzera, it's a rabbinic measure to prevent an Isur Doraisa. And what is the Isur Doraisa? The problem of marrying them before they convert, producing a child who then go off and become an idol worshiper. So the Rabbonon formulate their restrictions in a way that parallels the Torah scenario. So once again, what's the Torah scenario? A child being born from such a union, going off and becoming an idol worshiper. The Gemara continues, V'chi gozrubu Rabbonon, when do the Rabbonon impose their restriction of Jew marrying a seven-nation convert, one who converts to Judaism? V'chi gozrubonon, b'hanoch d'b'nei olodi, when you're dealing with those that are capable of procreation. Aval hai, but a ptsua daka? Delav bar alodi lo gozru be rabbonon. He's not capable of procreation, so no child is going to be born. So the whole fear of a child being born from such a union and then eventually going off to become an idol worshiper, had they not converted, so that doesn't apply over here. The Gemara asks, well, if it's all dependent on this issue of birth, of birthability, elo me'ato mamzer. Mamzer is in English we translate this as an illegitimate child. He's a child born from the union of a man and woman that were forbidden to unite with, to cohabitate with one another, to the tune of an Iser Kores, a severe type of violation of morality. And a child born from such a union is called a mamzer, and we know that a mamzer has marriage restrictions. So, but according to what you're saying now, elamiata mamzer debaro lodi, it's a healthy child, he's capable of procreation. Hachi nami de osir, are you going to say that a mamzer is then forbidden to a Nisino that had converted? What did we say just? What did Rava say just before that? The whole consideration is that even after they convert, where the prohibition would be only on a rabbinic level, but that involves cases where they would be able to procreate. Well, then, a mamzer that's capable of procreation, we would say that they cannot marry a nesino. But for Hotnan, but we learned in a Tanaic source to the contrary. Mamzerim unesinim, nesinim is the plural of nesino, mutoran lavo zebozeh. A mamzer, as we said, has a very extensive marriage restriction. His marriage possibilities are highly restricted, but a mamzer can marry a nesino. So that you see from here that the restriction of marrying a nesina in general is not something that is dependent on the capability of procreation, of reproduction. Eloki gozu rabbonon b'ksheirim. The rabbonon did impose a restriction of a Jewish person marrying a nesina even after she converted. But that's only if the Jewish person is a kosher, an acceptable type individual. Bipsulim, lo gozer rabbanan psulim, those that are unfit individuals, which will include the psua daka and the mamzer, lo gozer rabbanan. The rabbanan did not impose their ruling. The Rashi adds a point, a very well-known concept that applies to rabbinic rulings, and that is milsa de lo shchicha lo gozer rabbanan. Unusual cases are not the subject of rabbinic rulings, rabbinic restrictions, and this represents an unusual case. Continuing in the Gemara, hodor omar rava lav milsa hi di amri. Now notice the triangle repositions itself. And Rava here retracts that which he said. Lav milsidam, that which I said is not so. Begiyusan les lahu chasas. When the Torah says losis chatein bom, it's not referring to marrying them when they have still not converted, while they're still idol worshippers. So that the pasuk wouldn't be warning about do not create marriage with them when marriage could not be created in the first place. The warning of do not create marriage with them is a case where it has to be a situation where a possibility of creating a marriage, of establishing that legal institution of marriage, was a reality, and the Torah comes along and says don't do it. So we continue in the Gemara. Nisgairu is lahu chasnas. After a member of these seven nations converts to Judaism, so they're now considered Jews. The possibility of establishing a marriage exists, but possibility doesn't mean something's allowed. And comes along the Torah and says, do not establish marriage with them, with a converted member of the seven nations. However, when the Torah is warning against that, the Torah is warning that regarding kosher Jews. However, we know that a Ptsua Daka is allowed to marry them, those that the Torah said ordinarily don't marry. So this shows us that they are, that the Ptsua Daka is no longer b'kedushosei. He's no longer in an original state of holiness. And that information is extremely important, because that was the question that was asked originally of Rav Sheshes. The Ptsua Daka Kain, does he still maintain his Kedusha status? And if not, so then we can allow him, even though he's a Kain, we can allow the Ptsua Daka, who's a Kain, to marry a Giyores or a Meshuchreres. You'll notice that we have a bracket marking, and this was bracketed section, you'll see, goes down a number of lines down Omid Beis. And we have a note on the side that explains why this section is in the brackets. So on the side, let's read our note. Achrei ha-sograyim, agmora chuzeres ladun beheter p'tzua daka l'nesina. The Gemara will go back to this topic about can a p'tzua daka, in fact, marry a nesina. B'soicham ha-gemora makshe al-ha de-kava rova de-ein chasnus b'yois oivdei Rava made a statement, as a stated emphatically, that chasnus is not a possibility when someone has not converted yet. And the Gemara will raise this question, where the Torah describes King Solomon marrying the Egyptian princess. So you see that the term Vayishatein is used, even though it seems to be between Shlomo, who was a Jew, and the Bas Paro was a Goy. So let us momentarily skip the bracketed section, so as not to lose confuse the forest for the trees. We skip the bracketed section. Omar Lay, use your bracket length indicator, of course, to see where we're picking up on Omid Beis. Omar Lay Ravino le Ravashi. Fo anan lo tnan hachi. But we have not learned like that. Now, what is that a reference to? So if you look at Rashi, he says, Fo anan lo tnan hachi ki hach masnisa dekatani lapsu adaka mutter benesina. We had a Tanaic source that allowed the Psuadaka to marry the Nesina, and we concluded from that the Psuadaka was no longer in his original state of Kedusha. But we have a Tanaic source that says Psuadaka kushavcha mutorin begiras umeshukheres. The Psuadaka is allowed only to marry a convert or a free bondmaid. Ha benesina siri. And we infer, though, the marriage to the Nesina would be forbidden. Use your arrows and compare that which appeared on Omid Aleph. The arrows there point to the line that said Psuadaka is Mutar Benesina. Here we have a Tanaic source that says Psuadaka is Osir Benesina. The inference indicates Osir Benesina. So what are we to do? And that we'll get back to. Now, we go back over the Gemara. Mosiv Rav Yosef. We're starting with the bracketed section, three lines from the bottom. Rav Yosef asks, you, Rava, had said in the previous discussion that Los Hischatein Bom could not refer to Biosam Oivdei Kechavim because at that point the concept of chasness, of chitun, is simply non-existent. We have to repeat the point we made before, that when the Torah warns against doing something, it's warning against doing something that could come to be. But the concept of chitun, Rava said, doesn't exist when you're dealing with someone who hasn't converted, when he's still an idol worshiper. Now Rav Yosef challenges that. He says, Vayishchatein Shloimoi es bas paroi melech Mitzrayim. So here you have the Lashon of chasness, with Bas Paro was a goy, and it does come to be. The Gemara says, no, Giyure Gaira, Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, converted her. He made her first into a Jewess. Question, Vaha lo kiblu gerim, lo bimei David, v'lo bimei Shlomo. Conversion wasn't an option in the days of King David or King Solomon. Conversion to Judaism must be with pure intent. A person desires to become a member of the Jewish people because of his fondness of the Jewish way of life, of the Torah and its teachings. But if one joins the Jewish people for ulterior motives, so that brings into question the acceptability of such conversion. So in the times of David and Shlomo, the Jewish people were a very powerful people. They were on an international level. They were a very strong, prosperous, mighty military power and financial center. And people might want to convert to Judaism simply to partake in that. So we have a rule was a historical rule that gerim were not acceptable in those times because they weren't converting with pure motives. So that, how can you say that Shlomo had her, had converted her? The Gemara says, "Midi hu taima elo shulchan malachim." The prohibition of accepting gerim in the time of Shlomo, is it not because of this concept of shulchan malachim? People are coming in order to benefit literally from the table of kings, meaning they want to benefit from that which they otherwise would not have had. In the case of Bas Paro, she would have had it anyway. Ha lo tzrichole, she, the Bas Paro, didn't need the shulchan malachim. She was a princess of a mighty power at that time anyway, so that it's quite possible that he did convert her, and we would accept it, because if she was willing to convert, it would have been with pure motives. The Gemara asks, but still, even if he converted her, she would represent a first generation Egyptian convert, and he would not be allowed to marry her. V'tepuk lei d'ha mitzris rishonahi. So that even if from the Geru standpoint we can explain things, we can't explain how Shlomo could have married her because of her original nationality. The rule of the Torah is that a convert from Mitzrayim cannot marry rank and file Jews until their third generation. That means the convert would have had to have a child, and the child of that convert would then be mutter to marry. But here we're dealing with a first generation convert in the form of Bas Paro. And this question is a long question. The Gemara here suggests, you might say, V'chitemo hanoch azli la'almo, v'hani achrini ninhu. Those Egyptians that the Torah warned against marrying their first or second generation, those have long since gone. That was the generation that existed in the land of Egypt at the time of the Jewish enslavement, and they drowned at the crossing of the sea. And today's Egyptians, meaning in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, they are different. That's not true. V'hatanya. Here we have a Tanaic source that features a much later time in history, and the Mitzri consideration still existed. V'hatanya Amar Rabbi Yehuda Minyomin, this is a name, Minyomin Ger Mitzri Hoya Li Chaver. I had a friend, his name was Minyomin, and he was a convert from the Egyptian people. He converted to Judaism, and he was my friend, Mitamidei Rabbi Akiva, and he happened to be a student of Rabbi Akiva. Omar Minyomin said, Ani Mitzri Rishon, V'nosasi Mitzris Rishona, I am a first generation convert, and I married someone like me, which is okay. A woman who had been a first generation convert, she is the one that converted from an Egyptian woman that converted. Asi Livni Mitzris Shnia, my son, I will have him marry a girl who is the daughter of a Mitzri convert couple. Kedei she ben bini roi lovo bakol, so that my grandson can marry a regular Jewish woman. So what do we see from all of this? We see that Shlomo couldn't have married her even if she did convert. Namely, he couldn't have married the Bas Paro. Omar of Papa, Anan Mishlomo Leku Venesiv. Are we raising questions from the pasuk dealing with Shlomo? Shlomo lo nasiv midi. Shlomo didn't marry anybody. He didn't marry her whatsoever. Dichtiv bei. Regarding Shlomo, it says, Min hagoyim asher amar Hashem el bnei Yisrael lo yisavo bohem, vehein lo yavo bohem. From those nations that the Almighty said to the Jewish people, do not go amongst them, don't marry them, and don't bring them amongst you and marry you. If you do that, it will cause your hearts to veer off to their gods. Bohem dovak Shlomo li'ahavo. Those very nations, Shlomo cleaved unto them in love. Now here you'll notice the key words we dashed, underlined, dovak li'ava. His clinging to them was for purposes for love, but not for marriage. In other words, he never married them. Elokashia v'yischatein, but the pasuk says he did marry them. The more answers mitoch avo yisera shahava, through the a great love and affinity that he had for her, for the bas paro, for the Egyptian princess. Malov hakosuf ki'ilu nischatein bo. The Torah uses terminology, the Tanakh uses terminology, and it's as, indicating it's as if he married her. So as you can see in the entire bracketed section, we raised a question on Rava's approach to chasness, but we rejected that question altogether. Omer le Ravino le Ravashi, va'anan lo tanan hochi. But we have a Tanaic source that doesn't correspond to that which we saw on Omer Aleph. On Omer Aleph we saw a source that said a Ptsua Daka is allowed to marry an Asino, and that was very important to establish that Ptsua Daka was no longer Bekedushase. But here we have a source that reads Ptsua Daka Kushafa Mutarm Begiras and Mushucheres. A Ptsua Daka and a Kushafa are allowed to marry a convert, a woman converted to Judaism, and he's allowed to marry a freed bondmaid. But we infer Habin Asino Asiri, but marriage to a Nasina would not be allowed. Amale, Ravashi responds, Ulitamech Emo Seifa. Well, according to you, state the end of the source. V'einon Asurin Elo Milova Bakohol. The Tzuadaka is restricted only with regard to marrying Kohol. Haben Asina Sharo. But you could infer from that that the Tzuadaka would be allowed, yes, to marry the Nasina. Elo Meho Leko Lemashma Mino. From this source, namely from the Mishnah, in which it was our Mishnah that said that the Tzudaka and Kushaf were allowed to marry the Sinim Shukheres, you cannot draw inferences, because if you try to do so, you'll end up with a contradiction from that which you would infer from the beginning of the Mishnah versus that which you would have inferred from the end of the Mishnah. With that having been said, then Rava's conclusion remains that the Ptsua Daka is allowed to marry the Nasina, and if that being that is the case, so the original question raised regarding the Ptsua Daka Kayin, can he marry a Giores or a Meshuchreres? We will answer yes, because the Ptsua Daka phenomenon undoes the person's Kedusha status. The Mishnah. You can see in the Mishnah we've highlighted with a marking with a double underline the Ammoni, Moavi, Mitzri, and Edomi. These are four nations, and the Torah warns against marrying those people. But each category that we've double underlined has unique halachas that apply. So we start our Mishnah. Ammoni u'Moavi, Asurin, they are forbidden. V'Isurin Isur Olam, and their prohibition remains permanent, generation after generation. That they're the descendants of an Ammonite or Moabite that converted cannot marry into the regular Jewish fold, the Kohol. Avol Nikevoisehem Mutoros Miyad. But female members of these nations, Ammon and Moab, are allowed to marry a Jewish man immediately. So if an Ammonite or Moabite woman decides to convert to Judaism, she can choose as her mate in marriage a regular Jewish fellow. Mitzri v'edomi, einom asurim elo ad shloisha doros. Echot zuchar v'echot nekevus. So if we start from the end of this phrase, you can see already a difference between the Mitzri and Edomi people. Edomi, Edomites, and Mitzri are Egyptians. You can easily see a contrast, namely, with regard to the Mitzri and Edomi, males and females are treated the same. No difference in the, between males and females. So that's one point of difference. And another point of difference is that when we speak about the Mitzri and Edomi restriction, it's a restriction only for three generations. That so the point that we just made above on this Omid. So it's a three-generation restriction. With regard to the Ammon and Moab, when a restriction applies, namely in the case of males, it's a permanent restriction. Rabbi Shimon Matir Es Hanekevois Miyad. Rabbi Shimon allows the Mitzri and Edomi Nekevos immediately. No, the three-generation rule doesn't apply, according to Rabbi Shimon. Om Rabbi Shimon Kal V'Chomer Advarim. Rabbi Shimon says, I base myself on Kal V'Chomer logic. Uma'im v'mokoyim she'osar eshashchorim isur oylom. Hitter eshanekevus miyad. Mind you, in a case where, like in Ammon and Moab, where the males are prohibited permanently, the females are allowed immediately. Mokoyim she'osar eshashchorim elad shloishadoros. In the case of Mitzri Vedomi, where the males are restricted only for three generations, you know, din shenatiras and akevus miyad. So all the more so, we should be able to allow the females immediately. Omru lo. So the Chachomim responded to Rabbi Shimon. Im halocha nikabel. If your conclusion is based on a tradition that you have, then we will accept that. Rashi says, Im halacha shamatim rabosecha shenekevus mutaros miad b'mitzvah v'daimi nekabel mimcha. If you have that as a tradition from your rabbis, that the nekevus or mutaros immediately are allowed immediately in the case of mitzvah v'daimi, we'll accept that from you. However, the Mishnah goes on. V'im ledin yesh tshuva. Im ledin means if you arrived at that conclusion from simple kal v'chomer logic, there is a way to refute it. Omar lahem loy ki halacha ani oimer. Let's take a look at Rashi. Lo ki afilu ani don me'atzmi ein lochem tshuva kidem mefarsh b'gemara. Reb Shimon says 2 points. He says, even if I was learning it through kal v'chomer logic on my own, you would not have a response. U'mikom mokom halacha ani oimer. But at the end of the day, I am really conveying a tradition. The Gemara will explain, will present what their response to his Kal V'Chomer is, and how Rav Shimon is so convinced that his Kal V'Chomer is airtight. Again, we'll see that later in the Gemara. Mino Hani Mili. The Gemara asks, from where do we know the information that the Mishnah told us regarding the Ammoni and Moavi? We have a topic heading that we indicate until Ayin Zayin Omer Aleph, Ammoni v'lo Ammonis, Yichus shel David HaMelech. The Gemara will reveal to us the basis of the distinction between the males and females in the case of the Ammoni and Moavi people. And we'll be dwelling on David HaMelech's background, where he comes from. The Gemara, Minohani Mili, as we said before, from where do we know that which was taught in the Mishnah? Omer Rav Yochanan, Diyom Akra. The Pasuk says, Uchrois Shol, Uchirois Shol es David, Yotzei Likras HaPlishtim. When King Saul saw David in his approach to the Philistine, Omar el Avner Sar Hatzava, Shaul said to his military leader, Secretary of Defense, his Sar Hatzava, Ben mi ze hanar Avner, this youth, referring to David, who is his father? The son of whom is this youth? Shaul asks Avner, his military leader, his Secretary of Defense. Vayomer Avner. Chai nafshecho amelechim yadati. So he swears, if I would know, I would tell you. As I don't know. The Gemara asks, V'lo yodale, but Shaul didn't know who David was. V'aksiv, v'yaveu me'oi, v'hi lo noisei kelim. The pasuk describes earlier that Shaul loved him very much, and he was his arms bearer. Hello? Avua komashil. So the Gemara suggests what Shaul was asking about really was who is his father, as if he didn't know who David's father was. Question: V'aviv lo yodale. What? And Shaul didn't know who his father was. V'aksiv. The pasuk says V'ish b'mei Shaul zokein bo banoshim. There's a pasuk that describes a man in the time of King Saul who was an elderly person and a sage who was found amongst men. V'yomar Rav v'itemo Rabbi Abba. Rav and some versions have Rabbi Abba saying, "Say Ishai Avi David." This Ish that the pasuk referred to is a reference to the father of David, Shenichnas b'chlusa v'yotza b'chlusa, that he was the leader of a large group of people. Rashi says b'chlusa sar al shishim ribo. He was charged with overseeing 600,000 people. He was a very high-ranking individual. So it's kind of odd that Shaul is asking, who is his father? The Gemara answers, Hochi Ka'omar. So here we have already the third stage of trying to figure out what Shaul was asking about, and thusly we are to understand things. Zeal, Shaul said to Avner, Zeal Shaul, go ask, I mi peretz osi, I mi zerach osi. Now let us assume, as we have been doing, that Shaul is well aware of who David was and who his father was, and Shaul also knows that they stem from the tribe of Judah, of Yehuda. Yehuda had two sons, Peretz and Zerach, and that's what he was asking about. From which line, which Judah line comes David? Later, the Gemara will be asking it, what's motivating him to even inquire about this. But one thing is for sure: Imi Peretz Osi, if he, David, comes from Peretz, from that son of Yehuda, and again, generationally, you're speaking many years earlier, several hundred years earlier. So if he comes from Peretz, then Malka Havi, then he will end up becoming a king. And we should also note that David was not a descendant of Shaul. Shaul was from the tribe of Binyamin, and David from the tribe of Yehuda. So Shaul says that if it ends up that he comes from Peretz, he'll end up becoming a king. And this is something alluded to in the name. Shamelech Poreitz Lasos Derech Vein Memachin Biodo. Amongst the different rights that a king has is that a king can knock over fences. Poreitz Gedors, knock over fences, encroach upon people's property. If he needs to make a path to get from wherever his palace is to the road, he can cut through people's fields and claim that as his own property. So you see, Poreitz is to smash fences, and that's alluded to by the name Peretz, so that from Peretz there would be a monarchal lineage that develops. E mizerach, I'll see if David is from Zerach, chashiva ba'al mohavi. So his destiny is to become one of importance, but not a monarch. My taima omar le shalole. What motivated Shaul to start this inquiry in the first place? Dichtiv. The pasuk tells us that Shaul noticed something very unusual. Vayilba Shaul as David madov kemidoso. Shaul put the royal garments on David. He had him try them on. He had him dress in them. Uksiv bay, and it says regarding Shaul, Mishichmo v'malo gvoa mikolam. He was Head and shoulders. Here you have the expression of head and shoulders, and it's a shichmo, it's from shoulders above the rest of the people. He was a very tall, very large human being, dimensions that were unique to Shaul, nothing like that of David. So how could it be that David would put on Shaul's garments and it would be a perfect fit? That was something miraculous. But it aroused Shaul to understand that he's dealing with someone that has king potential, monarchical potential to him, and hence the royal garments would fit him as well. So it was important for Shaul to establish, is he from Peretz or from Zerach? Omar le Doeg HaDoimi. So Doeg HaDoim was one of Shaul's counselors. He says to Shaul, Ashata mashi lalovim hogun ulamachus in love, before you inquire as to whether or not he's fit to be, if he's destined to be a king, if he's worthy of being a king or not, Shaul love, ask about him, about David, im roi lovo bakol im love, if he's even fit to join the ranks of the Jewish people or not. My time, oh, to Kosimirusamoavia. Why is this a question? Because he is a descendant, he's a fourth generation from Rus, who was a Moabite woman. When the Torah warns against marrying the Moabite people. So Dovin HaMelech might very well stem from a forbidden marriage to begin with. Omar le Avner. So Avner says to Doeg, Tanino, we have a Mishnah that says, Amoni v'lo Moanis, Moavi v'lo Moavis. The Torah does restrict, but only the males, the Ammonite males and the Moabite males, not the females. And David was a descendant of merely a female Moabite woman, namely Rus. So Doeg asks back, Elameato, if that's the way you're learning the psukim, mamzer velo mamzeres, are you going to say that when the Torah says not to marry a mamzer, when the Torah says a mamzer shall not join the rank and file of regular Jewish people, it's a warning only against the males, but not the females? Is that, and we know that's not true. We know that even though the Torah speaks in the masculine, the prohibition applies equally to the feminine as well. The Gemara answers that as far as Mamzerus is concerned, Mamzer, see, if the Torah uses the term to describe the illegitimate child, the word Mamzer, emphasizing the etymology of it, Mum Zar. A Mum is a blemish as a result of being strange, a strange blemish. So the description of illegitimacy as such applies to females as well. So when the Torah says that a mamzer shall not marry into the Kahal Hashem, it applies to males and females equally. And we see this in the words, not in the gender form of speech, but rather in the etymology of the word. Question, Mitzri velo Mitzris. Well, just like you said, Moavi velo Moavis, are you going to say the same thing with regard to Mitzri velo Mitzris and allow a first generation female Egyptian who converts to marry a Jew? Certainly not. So the Gemara says, Shiny Hocha. Here it's different. In the case of Amon and Moav, things are different. And in the case of Amon and Moav, we have good reason for emphasizing the gender form of speech, male and not female. The Meforish Taimo Dekro, because the Pasuk spells out the reason for the Amon and Moav prohibition. And as a result of that explanation, we will make a distinction between males and females. What does the Pasuk say? It says that you shall not marry the Amoni or Moavi, al-Davar asher lo kidmu eschem belechem uvamayim. As a result of when the Jews were traveling upon their exodus from Egypt, and they approached the areas occupied by Amon and Moav, so Amon and Moav did not greet the Jews with bread and water, as one would expect is basic decency. If you see someone who's traveling through the desert, so offer them food and drink. But they didn't do it. The way of men to go out and offer food, offer services to wayfarers. It's not the way of women to go out greeting travelers. When we say it's not the way of women, this idea is referred to later, in the, you'll see this later in the Rashi, that modesty is that which characterizes women. And part of the modesty is this non-public feature. People who go out to greet travelers, those are people that are entering the public limelight. That's the way of men, not the way of women. So that the Torah, which finds a point of criticism amongst the Ammoni and Moabi people, it's a criticism that applies exclusively to the male members of those peoples. And hence, they are not accepted into the rank and file Jewish, to marry into the Jewish people, but their females would be acceptable. And just to not lose sight of the forest for the trees, we're talking about Dovid HaMelech's predecessor, his great grandmother Rus. We continue in the Gemara, and Doeg here raises a challenge. Hoya lohem lekadem anoshim likras anoshim v'noshim likras noshim. If what your concern is the issue of modesty, so modesty could have been preserved had the Moabite menfolk greet the Jewish menfolk and the Moabite womenfolk greet the Jewish women. And being that they didn't do that, so that shows that there's an inherent fault in all of the Moabi people. Ishtik. So Avner remained silent. Miad. Now, with this silence, so we see that Doeg seems to have a real claim against the cautious, the permissibility of David to be part of the Jewish people altogether. Miad Vayomer HaMelech Shal Atah Ben Mizeh Elem. So with that, the Melech, that's King Saul, asked, "Who is this Elam, this young man?" The Gemara asks, now again, when we say ask who is this young man, we're not saying ask what his name is, but we're ask about who, what's his true identity, his background, and not just that, but he's not really kosher to be a member of the Jewish people. The Gemara asks, in terms of words, we have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You can align this with the arrow you'll find higher up on the page, where when the Psukim reflect Shaul's inquiry, one Pasuk says, check out who is the Na'ar. And another Pasuk says, check out who is the Elem. The Gemara. Hasam kori le Na'ar v'hochi and Hacha Kori Le Elam. Why the change in speech? Hachi Ko'omar Le. Thusly, the king was saying, Halacha Nis'almo Mimchoy, says to Avner, obviously the Halacha has become hidden from you. Say, Ushal Bebeis HaMedrash, go check out in the yeshiva what is the explanation for David's presence amongst Klal Yisrael. Shal. He asked, Amulei, they answered, Amoni v'lo Amonis. Moavi v'lo Moavis. There is a restriction upon the male folk, but not a restriction concerning the female folk. So that David's great-grandmother, Rus, she was a female from Moav. No problem with her conversion. Akshi lehu Doeg kol hani kushaisa. Doeg raised all of his objections. Ishtiku. And the Beis Medrash, the members of the Beis Medrash, the rabbis, had no response. They were silenced. Bo'i l'achuzi olei. There was a thought to announce that David is not fit to be a part of the Jewish people. Miad, and upon that, immediately, Va'moso ben ish shmo Yasra Yisraeli, asher bo el Avigail bas Nochosh. This gentleman, Amosa, and his background is given here in the Pasuk. Uksiv Yasra HaYishma'eli. One Pasuk describes him as Yasra HaYisra'eli. Another Pasuk describes him as Yasra HaYishma'eli. Omar Rova Malame, the change in name reference from Yasra HaYisra'eli to Yasra HaYishma'eli. Rova says this tells us, it teaches us, Malame Shechogar Charbo Ki Yishmael. He girded himself with a sword like Yishmael. Yishmael is associated with one who lives by the sword. The Omar Kolmi Sheino Shomea Halocha Azu Yidoker Becheref. Anyone who doesn't listen to this halacha shall be pierced by the sword. Kach Mekublani Bebeis Dina Shel Shmuel HaRamasi. Thusly, I have as a tradition from the court of Shmuel. Amoni velo Amonis, Moavi velo Moavis. That's a tradition that when the Torah warned against marrying these people, it was a warning only restricting the male folk. The Gemara asks, Umi Mehemon, is Amosa's testimony reliable? We have certain rules with regard to halachic rulings vis-a-vis the events concerning which these halachic rulings are stated. Omar Rabbi Abba, Omar Rav, Kol Talmud Chochem Shemir Halacha Ba, any sage who is issuing a halachic decision. Im Kaidem Maise Omra Shomim Lo, if he issued the ruling before the incident arrived, meaning the Rav's position on a particular topic was well known from before the issue came up, so we accept, we can apply that halachic ruling, the imlav. If however that's not the case, but rather the case came and the chidush was stated only after the case came up, well, ein shomin lo, we don't heed it. We're interested in pure precedent or pure original halacha that's not binding upon, we're not bound to, or a result of a specific incident. So we prefer to have things, as we would say, that the laws are already written on the books, and all it's a matter of applying the laws that are on the books, as opposed to developing a law after a certain situation arises. So how can we accept Amosa Ben Ish and his testimony when it's stated only after the problem of David's background arose and he's now offering conveniently a solution? That convenient aspect is that which we're bringing into question. Someone says, Shiny Hocha, this case is different. Da Shmuel Beis Dino Kayom. Because the court was already there. In other words, Amosa Ben Ish, Shmuel Yasser Israeli, when he testified, he was saying, thusly I have from the court of Shmuel. So the court of Shmuel was already there. And that being the case, so the halachic ruling had already existed anyway. Rashi says, "Da'al Shmuel Beizino Kayim Umilso Davida Liglie Hu Velo Mishakir Ba." It would have become known anyway that Shmuel had issued that ruling. Shmuel, the prophet Shmuel, had issued that ruling, even without Amosa Ben Ish having reported that. So I'm not dependent on Amosa's promulgation or publication of that particular teaching. Mikol Mokom Kasha, but there remains the original question, namely Doeg's question of shouldn't the if the Moabite women are really acceptable women, how is it that the women folk didn't greet the Jewish women folk in offering the mayim and lechem, the bread and water? So in order to answer that, the Gemara says, Hacha targimu kol kvoida bas melech pnima. One approach is that that a woman knows her place, and her place is indoors. B'marovo amri v'teimo Reb Yitzchok in Eretz Yisrael, and some versions have Reb Yitzchok saying, Omar Kro, the posuk that is the basis of this idea that women are not weren't expected from the outset to go out and greet other women, is based on this that says, Vayomru, the angels that came to visit Abraham in Sefer Bereishis Parshas Vayera, they said, the Omar Kro, Vayomru Elov Ayeh Sora Ishtecha, Vayomru Hinei Bo'oyel. Rashi on this says, Hinei Bo'oyel, the Ein Derech Isha Lotzeis Mibeis. So it's not the way of a woman to leave her house. So this, the expectation of the Moabite women to having gone out and greet the Jewish women is something that we couldn't have expected from them in the first place, and hence they are not viewed as negative, in contrast to the menfolk that the Torah says are a negative people, because they didn't greet the Jews in their desert travels with lechem and mayim, bread and water. But we're in the middle of a sugya, and the sugya lasts quite a bit longer, but in view of the fact that we're presenting Shurim in the Daf Yomi context, this is a point. At this point we will pause, but before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our Shiur for today.